Good afternoon. My name is Walt. I am with the Creative Spotlight, and today we are sitting down with Bob Sally, the amazing creator behind the title Salvagers. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me on, Walt.
Thank you for coming on. Despite several technical glitches and the Empire doing its best to keep us apart, we have made it here today, and we're going to be talking about this awesome book. So, where are you from?
I grew up in Philadelphia, but I've been living in Boston for the past 13 years and haven't looked back. I love it around here.
Really? What brought you to Boston?
A buddy of mine, I had to, he was living out here and I needed to get out of Philadelphia, you know, one of those leave the nest type things. And he had a couch and I was about 23 years old and I was okay with that at the time. And, came out, was starting to look for my own place and everything. And then one of his roommates moved out and I just moved into his room.
Nice. Now it wasn't, now you left Boston, I mean, Philly on your own. You weren't chased out like guys in Rocky movies weren't like coming after you or anything.
No, more like a girl chasing me out of there. It was no, it was. I think that when I was growing up, I went to college out in Pittsburgh, and I never planned on, you know, staying in the Philadelphia area, and so I was always ready to move somewhere. And I think that my buddy living out here, just he was kind of encouraging me to, you know, get up and get out. So it was a good situation. Packed up the car and just moved up and haven't looked back. You know, it's I sold that car I think 6 months after I moved up here, and I haven't owned a car until about 2 years ago when I had a little baby girl. You know, you had to buy a car, and I'm like, oh man, I was like 11 years without a car was nice.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, it's been great. You know, you just I love the Boston area. I love the winters, even though that it just dumps on you.
What do you like the food?
Oh yeah. I lived in the North End, which is the Italian area, the Little Italy of Boston, for probably about 10 years. And luckily I didn't get fat, but it was you just roll right out of your apartment and you run into an Italian restaurant. So the food was really good. I miss the cheesesteaks, of course, but we get back there every once in a while for one.
Well, I mean, you know, you can just have your friends email them, I guess.
I think there's actually like you can ship them and they send you like everything deconstructed, you know, and then you just put it all back together. I know some people that in North Carolina that moved, you know, from Philly that moved down to North Carolina, and they do that. They have it delivered to them and the roll comes separate, the cheese, the meat, the, you know, peppers, all that stuff. And like it's still not the same, you know. You gotta go to Pat's or Jim's and stand in that line and do like the soup Nazi type situation.
Right. No steak for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when you go back to Philly to visit, do you ever have a problem understanding anybody or them
Not
understanding you?
bilingual. Yeah.
Bilingual?
I'm dropping my R's when I'm up here in Boston, and then saying U's when I go down there to Philly.
Yeah, is anything ever wicked
No, I never picked that up. But
pissa?
it's funny. I picked up when I came up here. Everybody says all set. Yeah, you're all set, and I liked that. And then I had a boss of mine that he and I noticed other people would say it. They would say like you read about. You know, they'd be like, you know, like, it was cold yesterday, like you read about. And I love that. I thought that that was a great one.
Oh my God, that's hysterical. The I know I went down south for quite a few years, and the first time I was down south, I went into a sub shop with my parents, and I asked for a grinder,
Yeah.
and they kept telling me it wasn't for sale. So I'm like, so they thought I was talking about the meat grinder, the deli slicer. So yeah, that was an interesting
Yeah.
experience. Now, what first got you into comics?
Being a kid, it's just, my buddies and I would ride our bikes over to a place called, the heck was the name of it? It was Comic Relief. And that was like the closest comic book store. We would ride our bikes over there on Wednesdays and, get the new comic books and, just like the characters and losing yourself in that. I think that even at a very young age, I always wanted to, you know, just create and entertain through storytelling. And I really liked comics, and all throughout my high school, and I always wanted to write comics. I wanted to draw comics, but I'm a horrible artist. And then when I got into college, you know, it's where you kind of like, oh, I want to be a serious writer. I want to, you know, I want to write the great American novel. And, you know, you start thinking about that direction, and, you know, as you start writing poetry, short stories, and all that. And it wasn't until I, it was probably like a year after I graduated college, I just hit some major writer's block. And a professor of mine always said, whenever you hit writer's block, just write anything. So I started thinking, like, all right, I love comics. Let's write, you know, let's come up with an idea for a comic book. And there was actually very little writing involved. I was kind of doodling characters, and they were all human. And I, you know, I was watching Star Wars, and I was thinking, like, you know, there needs to be somebody that cleans up this mess, you know. And it doesn't take place in the Star Wars universe. I, you know, it, but it's any universe, there's, you know, it's always stuff blowing up in space, and you think, like, somebody's got to clean this up. So I started to explore, like, what would it be if you had a company out there that had a bunch of different crews that went up to clean up space, who would they be? Like, what would they do? And would they, is that something where they would want to be doing it? Is it something where, like, if you lived in this universe, would you be like, you know, I got stuck with this crummy job of having to clean up the galaxy? I mean, because we all look at it and be like, that would be cool, you know, like being on a ship and having to go up and clean up a Death Star. But I think for them, the reality of it is, like, this sucks, you know, and this isn't where I planned on being in my life. So I really started going in that direction, and I loved the character development of coming up with characters that, you know, are in a place where they don't want to be, and who in their past had dreams of being something else, and are in the present are doing something that they don't necessarily want to do, and then looking to the future of where they want to be, and kind of building on that. And it's been a lot of fun. And I think for me as the writer doing it, it gave me a chance to really dive into these characters. And I always, you know, I always say to people that have read it, like, who's your favorite character? And most of the people like Brigby, but I having like knowing everything about all four characters, like, I really like all of them because they're very unique in their own way. You know, like, you got a pilot who is on parole, you know, and you got a captain who was a naval commander, and now, you know, and we will explore why he is now a salvager, but you know, he's got a real dark side to him. And then you got the big guy, Tyre, who is of a species who tried to commit genocide to another planet so they could take over it because their planet was uninhabitable. And now in the galaxy, they are feared, and they have to register, you know, and he kind of is a recluse because he doesn't want to be in, so, like, out in society because of the way they look at him. And then you have Brigby, who is just a mess. Like, he's just like, I just want to make a buck. You know, and he's got a gambling problem,
Oh,
and, you
yeah,
know,
issue two, right?
yeah, so he's kind of like not the troublemaker, but he's that friend that we all have that has that get rich quick scheme. And but he's smart, you know, he's a smart guy, and he knows how to take care of everything, but he also is selfish in that he brings every the you know brings you know, damage upon everybody. So, but I mean, that said, like, I love them all, and I know where they're all going, and I know where they've all been, and I'm looking forward to telling that, and, you know, bringing everybody else closer to those characters, and making them three-dimensional.
So since we're diving into the deep end already, let's get right into it and talk salvagers. When did you first come up with the idea?
I think it was like around 2002, 2003, I started writing it on a napkin in a bar. And, you know,
Like you do.
yeah, you know, I just started, you know, drawing like little sketches of the characters, and, you know, and thinking. And originally it was just in our solar system, but then I was like, I wanted to expand and, you know, kind of make it like its own universe. But yeah, and then there was so many times. I mean, saying that I started it in 2002, 2003, and then the first issue didn't go to print. Well, was it like I didn't hold the first issue until 2 years, November of 2013. So when I started writing this, I knew I wanted to be a comic book, and I didn't know then how smart that was, but like I know now. I had no dreams of even writing this in prose form, but I could see it in a comic book, and it kind of brought me back to my childhood of wanting to write comics. And you know, at the time there was no Facebook. You know, I had no idea how I was going to find an artist. The first artists that I found were on Craigslist, and you know, and it dwindled. Like they, you know, I'd get some sketches, but I think just like anything, if people don't know who you are and you're talking about this comic book and you have an artist who's looking to get paid, and they, you know, I think that they're skeptical. They're like, well, you know, are you really going to be committed to this? Are you really going to do it? Or am I going to waste my time, you know, drawing this stuff? And then for, you know, a couple months down the road, you're just going to drop it. So it was tough to find an artist. And then when I finally did, you know, we did some conceptualizing of the characters, and then his wife had triplets. So then he was off. He was like, I can't do this anymore. So then I was like, you know, I would say I probably took another year off. That, and I was like, okay, I'm, you know, I don't, because it was just, I don't know how to find an artist, you know. And I guess if you want it bad enough, you'd go to art schools or whatever, you'd find a way. But luckily enough, I was in Park City for Sundance Film Festival, and a friend of mine asked me how it was going. And I told her, I said, you know, I lost my artist. And she had just been at a high school reunion, and she went to high school with George Acevedo. And she was like, I have a friend who I reconnected with who does comic book art. You know, you should talk to him. So he and I started talking. I gave him the conceptual art that I had from the previous artist. And, you know, he did some sketches up, which I loved. And I told him, I'm like, let's do it. But again, I think, you know, not knowing the situation, I think it was like, okay, well, let's see, you know, let's see how it works out. Let's start slow. And there were times that George and I took off, like where it was like, yeah, you know, it's, we stopped doing it. And then there would be, I would see him draw something and post it on Facebook. And I'd be like, we need to get back into this. You know, we need to get back to this. So I had the script written, and my wife told me she was pregnant. So I told George, I was like, we need to do this now. I like, if we have 9 months to do this. and I really thought that, you know, I was like, it's going to be, we're going to do one comic and then that'll be it. You know, it's going to be over. Cause you know, I thought to myself, if I'm going to have a kid, I'm not going to be able to do this, but I don't ever want to say like, yeah, what if, and I wanted to at least hold that one in my hand and be able to feel that accomplishment. So we did it, and we, you know, we got it out in print in November. My daughter wasn't born until May. So when we had that, we put it out. I gave it to so many people, and people responded well to it. And we had a publisher come and say, like, you know, an independent publisher say that they liked it and that they wanted to bring us on. And at the time, you know, I thought being published was, you know, the biggest thing in the world. So it meant a lot. And so I was like, okay, well, I need to do the second one now. And my wife fully supported me in that. And then the second one really took off. Like that, you know, that one was even better than the first. I think George and I both stepped up our game. And then that kind of just snowballed into the third. And then from there, it was like, well, now I got to finish the story arc. And it's just, it's really, I feel fortunate that the fan base has been growing. The response to it has been very positive. It's great for, you know, my wife to see that, to see like, okay, well, it's not something you're doing that nobody cares about. So it's been very fortunate that I have that support at home. And now George is, we finished that first story arc, and George is off doing his own project. And, you know, he and I found Chris Jevonos. He's out of Utah, and he's an amazing artist. And I'm really looking forward to getting moving into volume two, the Recreators, where there's, you know, the villains in volume one were the droids. And that wasn't by accident. That was more like I didn't want to have to worry about a villain that I had to explore. I wanted to really focus on the main characters and have the readers get to know who they are. And now that you know who they are, now I want to bring in these pirates who I developed these guys ages ago. And I'm very excited to bring them out. I love these villains. These are villains that don't see themselves as villains. They see themselves, I don't want to get too into it, but they don't see themselves as villains. And I love that type of character that believes in what they're doing. And they think what they're doing is for the greater good. And I'm very excited to get like dive into them and show who they are. And that's what issue five, I guess the whole volume two, it's really their story. And the Salvagers are kind of they're along for the ride, but we're really diving into a whole new crew of pirates.
Now, the cool thing I thought about volume one was exactly what you were talking about. You took the very aspect of droids where you didn't have to explore, so that you could kind of focus on the main characters. But you also had a cool story arc in there in explaining why those droids were there on the ship and what was really going on. I thought I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not going to go too much into detail. But the people who kind of set this all up had this neat way of disposing with the problem. The drop pods, the escape pod thing, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that I thought that was really creative, very, very cool in the way that you explained it. Do you have to go to a lot of hard science to come up with some of the story aspects, or do you keep it pretty close to science fiction?
I think a little of both. I try to make it, obviously I don't want to make it like where people are like, okay, you lost me there. I don't want to write something where people are like, well, that's not even possible. So I do try to keep it close to scientific, but I also want to keep the science fiction in there as well. So I think that I try to create a balance. And speaking of why those droids are there, we're not finished telling that either. There's, we're just we're still on basically the surface of the onion, and we still got some peeling back to go. And again, I mean, that's the style of writing that I always had was, show everything on the surface and then keep cutting in a little bit more and more. But that scene, like that was one of the things, I think anybody who's a writer, when you're in the process of writing something where you come up with it and it shocks you, you're like, oh, I didn't even see that coming. And that's when you know you have something good. That scene when I was writing it, I didn't even know that was coming until I wrote it. And then I was, and you sit back and you're like, oh, that's good. I like that. And then you see it and you're like, that's perfect. It fits. There's no rough edges on that. You're like, that's exactly what needs to happen here. But it's been a fun process. It's been a learning process, but I really have been enjoying it. And again, like I've been really enjoying creating the story because there's a lot of things that I didn't know about. In the issue four, when I was finished writing it, and there's a moment where Ronix he might be at his end, and he whispers a name. And when I was writing that, I had no idea who that was.
That's one of the big things in that issue and in that arc, because you're dealing with these four characters. The only real connection you have to a past for these people comes in the beginning of issue two. So when you have that scene kind of explaining why they had to take this job, but then he whispers that name and you're like, whoa, who's this? What's this all about? That was kind of neat.
Yeah, and then when I started thinking about it more, I realized who it was, and I created a whole – I mean, I basically right there created the reason why he's on that salvage ship, why he's a captain, and who he has become from a certain events that have happened in his past. And I'm going to write a graphic novel – that is called Ronik, and it's going to be that those events, and it's going to be a prequel to him becoming a salvage captain, and I'm really excited about that one.
Right on. The you know, the whole time I was reading, you know, because I was one of your Kickstarter backers, and unfortunately, I wish I had.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Oh yeah, no worries. You know, it, your art caught me, and the idea was fantastic. So, and I actually came in for issue 4, and managed to buy in so that I could get all the issues digitally. And I loved reading it all at once. So that was fantastic. The other thing I really enjoyed is. I had this clear image in my head of if we had actors on screen, portraying these guys, I knew exactly who would play who, you know, and that says a lot for comic writer and an artist, because I mean, when you're doing that, all that heavy lifting and you can automatically say, oh my God, you know, Ronick is what do you call it? I could picture a young Bruce Willis in this line.
Oh wow, yeah, I like that. I never actually thought about him. I like that.
You know, I mean, just the everyman who just it is more than he seems, you know, and stuff like that was really, really made this a fun read. Now we have we also have some. You were saying you know you're going to expand the story of the droids later on, but we also have some events that happened at the very end of the issue.
Yeah.
You know, we get to see some people.
The last page.
Yeah. Is that going to?
Oh yeah. That's the yeah. They're going to be playing a major part in issue. So volume 3, they're going to be playing a major part in volume 3, but you're going to start seeing who they are in volume 2.
Nice.
And you'll actually see one of them in issue 5 that we are going to be doing a Kickstarter for January 4th. Got to throw that plug in there.
Yeah. I have it in my notes right in front of me. So we were going to get to that at some point.
Gotcha.
Now, with the impending issue 5, are you planning another four issue story arc?
Yep, I got 4 scripts written. The volume 2 is already written. Now it's just a matter of, you know, getting the art done, getting them printed and getting them out there, which is, you know, that I always like to do these Kickstarters as exclusive rewards. The things that you get in the Kickstarter, you know, minus the comics, you can't get anywhere else. But with the Kickstarters, you get your name in the comics. So that is something that you can get only in the Kickstarter. You know, people that are buying it after the Kickstarter is obviously you can't get your name in our executive producers page. But I really like to keep everything exclusive. And we are, you know, I like to do it as a pre-sale. You're helping us get the production working and get the print going. And it really helps things speed up. Otherwise, you know, it would take most indie creators, you know, a year to do one issue. So, you know, we're learning as we go as well.
Now, in between issue 3 and issue 4, it seems like in issue 4, we have a change of publisher. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Issue 2, in between issue 2 and 3, we had a different publisher. I was self-publishing these as my own Dirty Planet. I think you're right. I think I did do Dirty Planet for issue 3, right? I was doing them, self-publishing them under my own Dirty Planet Entertainment, and I met Ruben Romero with Think Alike Productions, and he and I on Facebook just really became good friends. He is the CEO and founder of Think Alike Productions. I liked what they were doing over there, and he just had a good sales pitch. And really what it was Comixology. I couldn't do the Comixology myself. It was one of those things, just like I couldn't connect with you on Google Hangout. trying to figure out how to submit my stuff to Comixology, that would be like me trying to get to the moon. So they had a really good in with Comixology, and I and I liked him, and I wanted to help Think Alike Productions any way I could. And if bringing Salvagers to them brought more fan base to them as a publisher, and then I'm happy to do that. But yeah, they've been great with getting us on Comixology and being able to do a lot of the advertising and promotions. They were in New York for New York Comic Con, and they were handing out flyers for Salvagers, and they've been great. I've been very happy ever since moving over with Think Alike Productions, and they've been great to me.
Now, are they pushing a lot of the Facebook exposure that you're throwing out now, or is that you?
Well, I have my own page for Salvagers that I run. They have their own Think Alike Productions page, which they do a lot of sharing of my Comixology, my artwork, my page. So they definitely do their job of pushing stuff out there.
Are they going to be involved in the Kickstarter?
No, the Kickstarter I'm doing on my own. Again, this is, it's Think Alike Production is creator owned. So they, they're a great house to live in. Still as the creators take care of their own. They will be, obviously they'll be supporting me in every way they can.
Nice. Right on. Yeah. Or should I say all set?
All set.
Right?
Like you read about.
Like you read about. Oh, my God. My childhood come rushing back. I'm actually right down the street from you. So, I mean, it's, I fully understand the slang. What can you tell us about the Pirates coming up in issue 5? I mean, you got those great posters and these great like cover images that are being put up on Facebook right now. And Kickstarter backers had exclusively a couple of pages hit their email, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about these bad boys?
These they're Klandarians from the planet Klandar, and they are actually the planet that the Typernians, which is what Tyre is, they're the planet that Typernians tried to invade and take over. So now where we are right now with Klandar is that it's a post-apocalyptic world. The war was right there on that planet, and the planet was just decimated, and now the Klandarians are kind of stuck on that planet, and the Federation is trying to help them out, and there are Klandarians who believe that the Federation is there to help them. There's other Klandarians that believe that the Federation is there to kind of keep them on their planet, and they don't want they don't want to have them come out. They want to be like, here, you stay there, and we're gonna fix you up, we're gonna send you aid. So there's a struggle there between Klandarians, that are pro Federation and pro, and then anti Federation. And these pirates, they actually stole a Typernian battleship and now use it as their pirate ship. So they are constantly out there trying to find weapons to, strengthen that battleship. Obviously that there's no, they don't have any war develop, there's no development of, munitions on Klandar. So they have to kind of go out there and find their own. And their goal, the way they look at it, is they're protecting Klandar. And where other people feel like they're just out there looting and killing people. So that's where that's where they think what they're doing is right. And I don't know if I'm giving away too much here, but I really like these guys. And the leader, if you see the posters and everything, you'll notice that the leader is not Klandarian. And he, one of my characters, Largo Ross, he was like a Klandarian commando, and he found Shantimus when he was a boy and raised him, taught him how to fight the ways of Klandarian war, and he really brought him up to be a great soldier and a great warrior. And until the day came that Largo was like, you are now set to lead these people, and he kind of takes a step back as like his mentor, and now Shantimus is the leader of these Klandarian pirates, and so now they're, I don't want to give too much away, but now they're off. And they made a deal with some people to get some weapons, and they're going to the same ship that the salvagers just, cleaned up. And when they get there, they kind of are like, what the heck? So they do a little investigating and they're like, all right, well, we got to go find these salvagers because they have our weapons.
Now,
And
there's a lot of similarity in the storyline that you're talking about to a lot of real world events. You have the Pirates of Somalia and how the warlords destabilized the region, whether it was to strengthen their own region within the country or whether to whatever. But you have piracy rampant on that front. You have a lot of the the Syrian escapades that are going on right now. Do you pull a lot from real world events, or this just kind
no,
of.
I mean, I think that it's hard not to. I think that when if you're a writer, you pay attention to everything going on because, what they say, stranger than fiction, when you watch some of the things that are going on in the world, as a writer, you think like, shit, I could have never came up with that. So, I think that, but I also think when you're writing sci-fi, it's, you need to relate it to people. People need to be like, I could make something up where it's, people would be like, wait a minute, I don't get it. And it's your job as the writer to make people get it. But I think pulling, Gene Roddenberry did a great job of that, with Star Trek, to be able to take what's going on in society and put it into space and in such a way that people see it and they're like, that's messed up. And then you'd be like, well, you think that's messed up, but it's happening right in your backyard. So I definitely, I definitely pay attention to what's going on in the news and I see things and I, when I come up with a character and these Klandaran characters are absolutely, the Somalian pirates, they're very closely based on those, just because in writing their characters, it kind of, not that I forced it to go that way. It just kind of moved that way, whether it was subconsciously or, the way that their history went, it just worked out.
Right on. That's definitely pretty wild. A quick side note. Have you seen the sci-fi TV show, the first episode they put up online, The Expanse, yet?
I haven't. I recorded issue or issue. I've recorded episode 1 and 2, and I'm waiting for the wife to go to bed tonight, and I'll watch that. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm a big fan of Tom Jane. I had the opportunity to talk to him and hand him all 3 of my comics at Boston Comic Con.
Oh,
Yeah, he was a really cool guy. He walks around barefoot. I don't know why, but he walks around the Comic Cons barefoot.
that's brave.
Yeah.
When I was watching the first episode, I'm like, oh my God, I have to talk to you about this, because that first episode definitely had that gritty, real feel that Salvagers had, and same kind of theme in some of it. And I liked the fact that the show very closely mirrored the comic. They should pay you royalties, by the way. We'll make sure we link them on Twitter. I liked the fact that you have in both aspects, you have this group of people that are just looking to, do the job and go home, and there's all this craziness around, the galaxy's on the brink of war, and this faction doesn't like this faction, and you get that sense that there's a lot going on that you're not seeing from these people's perspective yet, because they're the cleanup crew. They're not the guys involved in the front lines. They're there to clean up the mess when everything goes to hell in a handbasket.
Well, yeah, I did not. So I haven't really known the concept of it yet, but yeah, you know what? If sci-fi's taking a look at me and they're coming up with something, that'd be awesome.
Like I said, they should cut you a check. We see Brigby has himself in a little bit of trouble in volume one. And they at the end of volume one, you get that sense that, there might be a payday coming. Is Brigby out of trouble, or is he still in the thick of it?
You gotta keep breathing. Yeah, I can't give that away.
So, I mean, that was definitely an interesting part of the story, you know, seeing that you have spaceships and zero gravity and robots and conflicts between huge mega governments, and you still have people with real world problems, even though they're short, green, have antennas and a tail.
Yeah.
Now, can you talk
No.
about character design a little bit? Did you know what these characters were going to look like right from the onset?
Well, so I didn't actually. So Brigby, I had this idea when I was talking to the first artist. I was like, I see half lizard, half ape. And he put together a design. I showed that to George, and I told him the same thing, and George gave me something totally different. But when I saw what George did, I was like, that's it. That's perfect. So like you got a kind of a lizard guy who's got horns and he kind of moves like an ape, and then seeing that, I had a cork board. I did all my writing in my living room in this little one bedroom apartment in the North End, and I had a cork board right above my TV, and there was so many nights I would be at home without the TV on, and I'd have the character art pinned up on this cork board, and as I there was time like there was more sitting there looking at it and just thinking like, what would you guys do? And then but Brigby was always the trouble. He was always the joker, and then you had Tyr was always going to be the warrior, and Tegan was always like, she was not a damsel in distress by any means. She's more that that Amazon who she can take care of herself. She doesn't need a man. She's that strong female character. And Ronik is that king archetype who he's the leader and he needs to make the tough decisions. But I wanted to do something different with him. You have Han Solo who's got the swagger. You got Kirk who is just that captain that's in control. Like, I wanted to make a captain who was kind of just teetering on the brink, like where he's just had some he's had some events like that he's just trying to live right now, and he's just trying to maintain like a calm, and and he's trying to keep everybody together too, and he's trying to be a boss. So for him, I'm looking forward to continuing writing the story because I really am looking forward to taking. I like to take these characters and break them down, so we can see like, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna stay down or are they gonna get up? And if they're gonna get up, what's their motivation? Why are they gonna get up? If these characters are so, if I have a character that's just so at his end. What is it? What is the driving force that's going to make him stand up and say, like, not yet? So I'm really looking forward to writing that. And Tegan, I just didn't want to have any conventional characters, and I hope that I pulled that off. With Tegan, I wanted to have a character that, was questionable, a strong female character that was questionable. She means well, but she's a criminal. She's reformed, and she's paid her dues, and now she's stuck with these guys. Like, she's been punished, she's gone to prison, but now this is the end of her punishment, and she is she's a great pilot, and she probably thinks like this, piloting a big clunky garbage ship is beneath me, but we'll dive more into her too. And I think volume one, I was able to take all four characters and make you feel something for them, but I'm really looking forward to getting more deep into each one. But and each one of them is so unique in their own way. I'm very excited to get into them, and I'm thinking to myself right now, like, how am I going to do that? So it's going to be interesting.
The cool thing that I really thought stood out about a lot of the Salvagers series were a lot of the names. You had names that you that feel authentic and feel like, you know, when you actually say them out loud, it rolls off the tongue in a way that you're like, all right, yeah, I can see that. And then the other side of it, you have names that you're like, I see what you did there. Do you have a method for going about and naming things, especially in a way that makes things fun for the reader?
Well, you know, it's I take a look at the character and I just say that I say the name out loud, like a lot, and if. And I'll keep playing with it until, like, you just feel it. You're like, you say, like, when I'm looking at Brigby, it was, like, I just knew it. I was like, I know that that's Brigby. Like, and I would say it enough. And until, for me, it was like, it's not weird. You know, that's him. But with Brigby, I was like, I want that to be short for something. So I came up with a really long name. And they only say it once in issue two. But it's right as he's, you know, he's with the mafia, they say his full name. And if you look at it, the beginning and the end, if you put them together, it's Brigby. So I wanted to do something creative with that. But, you know, the other one, like Ronick, I came up with that. I've always been a big fan of Jeremy Ronick. And when I was writing his character, and this was, I'm talking like back in like 2003. That's when I had his name. you're trying to come up with a name for the guy and everything. And I think Jeremy Roenick was like, I don't know if he was playing with whoever he was playing with, the Avalanche or someone, but I think I just saw that name and I was like, you know, Roenick was, I always thought Roenick was a cool name. And I think it was like maybe a little, you know, kind of, taking the piss, like where I was like, you know what, I want to name my main character Ronick to see if years and years and years from now, if the name Ronick, people will think of a hockey player or they'll think of my comic book. So that might be a little arrogant on my part, but I love the name. And for me now, I mean, it's been so long that, you know, Bill Ronick is the captain of my ship. Tegan, I don't even know how I came up with that name. I think it just kind of came to me, and it was one of those when I thought of it, I'm like, all right, sounds, you know, looking at her, I'm like, it sounds like her. And then Tira, just again, I think it was another one where I think it was actually spelled T-I-R originally, and I was playing with it and coming up with different ways of writing it. And again, it was just one of those things. I think as a writer, when you're doing something, you look at it and you're like, that's it. So that's how they all got named.
Oh, see, now with Tyr, I thought something totally different because he just has that stand against quality. Like, you're not getting past me. You know, if I need to do something, you know, if I have to beat you with a pipe, you're going down.
Yeah, he definitely has that.
You know, so and we see some of that in the issue.
Yep.
And when I saw his name spelled, I'm like, oh, he's named after the Norse god. That's pretty cool. And I was
well. You know, and I believe that is why I spelled it the way it was, because originally it was T-I-R, and the Norse god, I remember thinking, like, am I going to have to take his arm off? but I was like, nah, you know what, he can have two arms, because I was like, it would look weird if he had one arm. But it was one of those things, because I think as I was playing with it, you know, I do a lot of Googling, because I always want to make sure, like, am I stealing anything? And yeah, so I did kind of play with that.
Right on. Yeah, the naming thing really caught me. I really enjoyed reading the book because, you know, certain things I had to say out loud, like, how would you say that? You know, and then certain things were just like, ha, that's fun. So,
well, like the planet that the docking planet Neruda 3 is one of my favorite poets, Pablo Neruda. And I just always liked that last name, so. And I don't know if you might want to cut that out. People will be like, oh, it's a planet named after a poet. But I just always liked that. And when I was thinking of the, you know, obviously these people, if you think of like, you think of society, it's like, okay, we have these grimy people who are always out there in space and, you know, they're questionable when they come back. Like, they wouldn't want them to be in like the main hub of the galaxy. So I was like, we need to have a planet that's a space dock where these people come to They unload all their stuff, and then we have some better people that pick that stuff up and bring it into the core of the galaxy where, you know, the good people of the galaxy live. So that's where I came up with Naruto 3, and then figuring it's, you know, it's there's probably a lot of criminals and questionable people. So I definitely am looking forward to going back to that planet and exploring more and seeing more of, you know, the layout of it, the typography, and you know, the cities and the people that live there. But yeah, then I think it's fun to name things. Sorry. The pirate ship, the pirate battleship, is called the Apophis.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's if you know what the Apophis is, then you know it's a badass ship.
As what you were just saying before, there's it sounds like there's a lot of class segmentation in the galaxy. That kind of speaks to Captain Bill's predicament. Like it almost just hearing you say that makes whatever put him in his current position feel that much more severe. Because yeah. If the galaxy's that, you know, fractured from one class of people to another, falling from one to another might hurt a lot worse in that society.
Oh yeah,
that's crazy. The covers for the four issues, they're, yeah. Each cover is very distinct. Can you talk about the process of working with an artist to develop a cover that gives enough of the issue away that you want to pick it up, but not enough to where you don't need to pick it up?
Yeah, so these were all George Acevedo. I mean, I basically told him for issue one, I was like, I just want all four characters on it. And when he came up with that, I was, you know, again, I was blown away, and I was just like, it's beautiful. Issue two, which I think is most people's favorite cover, where you just kind of see Brigby sitting in a chair with two hands on his shoulders, bleeding out of the mouth, with like a cracked tooth. I mean, that just says that you know what's happening there. You don't know that it's a flashback, but you know, you see like this guy's not going to have a good day. And that was all George. I mean, he just sent that to me and I was like, done. Perfect. Issue three, we were having, like, you know, we were trying to figure out, like, what are we going to do with issue three? And, you know, if you, I think the best thing about the covers is it gives you the main sense of what's going on in that chapter. It gives you like that, you know, you know, zenith of action that's happening in that one. So, I agree. I think that the covers, you know, when you look at the covers and then when you're finished reading it and you look back and you close it and you look back at the cover, you think like, oh yeah, that's perfect. So they were great. And then we were going to come up with, for the trade paperback, we were going to try to come up with something that exemplified the whole volume. But I thought, I was like, you know what would be best is just having that logo faded on the side of a dirty ship. And George disagreed. He didn't think it would be a good idea, but then when he did it, he was like, oh yeah, he's like, this works perfectly. And, you know, and I've had people tell me, like, when showing it to people, I've had people say like, nah, I don't know, it wouldn't make me want to pick it up. But I thought to myself, like, you know, if you read it and then you closed it and you looked at it, you'd be like, that's perfect. So it might not be something that, you know, catches your eye enough to pick it off the shelf. And, you know, it's probably the one thing that, you know, you want to do as a writer is to have a great cover, but I love it. And I think it'll grow on people, or hopefully it does. I don't know, but well, you know what? It's my comic book and I can do what I want with it.
yeah. There's no Boston or Philly in that attitude. Symbol, the logo for the Salvagers. Very cool. Yeah. Very iconic.
Thank you.
You know, you see,
Thank you.
Oh yeah, you see that. And it just begs the question, like, what is this? So, I mean, you got no worries there.
And that's what I thought with the cover of it. I thought the exact opposite. I thought like, if I saw this on a shelf and seeing like, okay, that's obviously like, It's metal. Is at the side of a ship. It's, you know, that's a logo. Like, I would be like, I want to know what that logo is. Like, I want to know what's inside that. And then I'd pick it up, and hopefully picking it up, I'd be like, okay, I'm buying this.
So we got the graphic novel set to hit stores. Where can people, if they want to find Salvagers, either digitally or in print, what's the best way to do that?
Well, if you're looking for it digitally, you can go to Comixology and search Salvagers, or search Think Alike Productions, where they have a bunch of other great titles. If you wanted to buy it in print, I have my own print store. It's www.salvagers.bigcartel.com, and you can buy the issues, you can buy T-shirts. We usually throw a bunch of different stuff up there. Well, you know, we try to, you know, get that merchandise. You want a mug. You want a T-shirt, you want a hat, the fun stuff. Right now, I'm in six stores nationwide. I have a store in San Antonio that I'm in. There's a store in Seattle that I'm in. We got stores all over Boston. It's great being local. They love that localness. But we're not on Diamond. We're just not there yet. But it's hopefully in the future we will be, if, you know, the popularity keeps rising and there's enough people that are going out to stores asking for it. And anytime that anybody's got a local store, they can find me on Facebook, Bob Sally, and shoot me an email and tell me like, hey, this is my local comic book shop. And I try to contact them all the time, and I send them, you know, the issues digitally to see if they, you know, if they like it, they want to put it on their shelves, and you know, I try to work out a deal with them. So you know, it's been a long road. I mean, I'm always appreciative to be in any store, and I feel like right now being in six stores is great. We also are translated in France. We are in France. We're going to be printed in France under Editions Reflections, and we shortly will be translated in German and be printed in German under Plem Plem Productions.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yep.
That's pretty cool. Have you been translated into Bostonian yet?
Yeah, that would be something.
Now, diverging a little bit and going to other sides of the lake, what are you reading right now? What kind of comics do you read, or do you not have the time because, you know, storylines and a family don't leave much?
Well, I mean, that is the case, but I do try to read as much as I can, and I feel like if I'm an indie creator and I'm out there pushing my own, I try to help and support all other indie creators. So currently right now I'm reading things like Earth Outlaws by Molly Schofield. I'm reading The Agency by Think Alike Productions. I have Zombie Highway. I go on Kickstarter and I try to support other indie creators all the time. You know, I feel like if you're going to put yourself out there and look for support, you need to also support others. And, you know, it's a network, it's a family, and it's something that we all need as creators. So, you know, I definitely, what I'm reading right now is a lot of independent titles. I'm reading The Mighty Titan by Joe Martino, and, you know, just trying to help others out there because they really show a lot of support to me, and I want to give that back.
Right on. Yeah. Oh my God. I love the indie stuff so much more than what a lot of the bigger companies are doing, just because, I mean, I just saw today, you know, the next, issue of, Captain America via Sam Wilson. They're bringing back Catwolf, and it hurt me in the soul. It really did. So, I mean, having guys come out and producing something of this quality, like Salvagers, I'm a big sci-fi fan myself. So, Molly Schofield's Earth Outlaws, and Mutant Chasers.
Mutant Chasers, yep.
So, I mean,
she's done a great job with those.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. Yeah, absolutely gorgeous. You know, having stuff like that scratch the sci-fi itch. Stuff like Zenith Comics presents Heroic and Legacy, for the superhero itch. So I mean, there's so much good stuff out there, but I can't tell you for a guy that's a lifelong comics fan to have something like Salvagers that, you know, when I'm not feeling capes, cowls, and masks, I can go to and really have a geek out moment.
Well, I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, right on, man. It's really something big. So I really believe you have something special on your hand with Salvagers. And
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh yes, sir. What you have produced so far, not only was fun, but I think it elevates the level of quality of what indie comics should be and how they're produced. So I mean, that's definitely something to say.
That's a huge compliment, and I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, I mean, if anybody picks this up, they should definitely look at your production values and your story beats, and how the story was told. Like, you know, you got the first issue that starts off in kind of like the thick of things, and then the second issue relaxes a little bit and shows you how things kind of got that way, and the third issue expands on it, and then the fourth issue tying all the threads together. You know, so. You know, this is the way a collaboration between a team should look, and I think more comics creators should aspire to this level of quality. So, I mean, that's
well, thank you.
Oh, yes, sir. If people want to stalk you on the internet, what's the best place to find you?
Facebook. I am always on Facebook to the point where sometimes my wife tells me I need to put the phone down and you know, come back into the moment here. But I try to. Anybody that messages me on Facebook, I will always get back to you. I feel like when I started out with this, I didn't have Facebook. I didn't have somebody that I could go to say like, hey, I got this great idea. What's the next step? So I really try to be that person for people. If they come to me and they say like, I got a script that I want to, you know, make into a comic book. You know, what can you tell me to do? And, you know, I will give you the pointers. I will help you, you know, put you in the right direction. Cause I know that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of great ideas, and it took me 10 years to go from, you know, a napkin to issue one in my hand. So if there's any way that I can help close that gap for somebody, then, you know, I'm going to be all there for you. I'm also on, I'm on Instagram. Twitter I play around with, but I try to leave it to at least two. Social media, there's so many of them out there. And the Gary Vaynerchuk said it best. He said, it's better to be really good at one or two social medias than to suck at 10.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I try not to get sucked into the vortex, the gaping hole that is Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, blah, 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 you know, just one or two, or use one of them to regurgitate to all of them.
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, it's good to, you know, the tough part is, you know, rationing it 10 minutes at a time, you know, once or twice a day, you know, because you basically have to, especially with something like Facebook, you have to scroll through a mountain of vitriol to get to my Salvagers feed. And it's like, hey, there's something cool. So, yeah, I can definitely see how being an ace at one would definitely benefit you. Well, I think that's going to do it for our time today. Is there anything that you'd like to pimp other than the impending Kickstarter for Salvagers number 5 that will be launching just after the first of the year?
No, that's it. That's the big one. If you are new to the series and we have rewards where you can get everything digital. If you've already read issue or volume 1 and you're looking for more, we're going to have that. And we're going to be giving away a lot of cool stuff. I like to try to find out ways that I can give a lot out there for people who are taking the time and spending their money on something, as indie as this. And, every time, you know, it pops up and you see that you have a new backer, it's, you know, it's just special to think that somebody is, you know, putting their money out there and trusting you to entertain them. So any help that you can put out there for Kickstarters, not just for me, but for other comic book creators out there that are, you know, trying to get their stuff out there, as quickly as possible, again, to entertain people and to give them something other than, you know, the same, you know, Wolverine dies and now he's back to life again. You know, it's,
yeah.
But yeah, no, take a look at us on Facebook, Salvager Series, and we're about 10,600 likes on that page, and we're constantly updating it and putting out new art. We have a lot of artists that come to us and they do the art for us just because they know that we're going to put their Deviant Art link on there. So if you're an artist looking to be seen, come by, talk to us. You know, if you want to take the time to do our characters, we'll pimp your links to your sites and everything. And we, you know, we're appreciative that you'll take the time to even do the art for us.
Right on. So has there been any Salvagers cosplay yet?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, just when I was in Hartford, there was a friend of mine, his niece dressed up like Tegan. And we got pictures of that on Instagram. She did a great job. I have Scarlet Fly, who's a good friend of mine. She does a lot of cosplays. I actually created a character for her in our spinoff Salvagers The Deliverance, as well as Tim Wiley. He's one of the main characters along with Scarlet. And we're having a lot of fun with the cosplayers, and hopefully we'll have more.
Right on. Well, this has been our time with Bob Sally, formerly of Philadelphia, now a son of Boston. And we've been talking about Salvagers and all things indie comics.
My name is Walt, and you've been listening to the Creator Spotlight on the Banff Podcast.